You are Locked On Browns, your daily Cleveland Browns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good evening, everybody. Locked On Browns here. As we continue to take you through pro days off season, we do have some NFL news to open up with here. Obviously, guys, we're always going to cover the league on a whole, but it is your daily delivery of all things Dog Pound on the Locked On Browns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Guys, you know, obviously, you know, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you're looking for something different, check out the Himalaya app. That's a new one out there. We've partnered with them. They're, you know, gaining some steam here as, you know, they, you know, make their way here into the podcast community. So if you are looking for something different, go ahead, check out Himalaya, you know, download it for free, subscribe to Locked On Browns, check out the shows over there. We had places where we were going to start here today, but, you know, obviously a little late-breaking NFL news here before we kicking this one all off. And this one, I mean, I don't know. For me, it's a head-scratcher. Good franchises do good business. The Philadelphia Eagles are becoming one of those teams. They're becoming Belichick-y. They're becoming Patriots-ish, where they make good moves. But Jordan Howard, and I forget the extent of, you know, what was the compensation, sixth-round pick, conditional, whatever, Jordan Howard is now going to go to the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles obviously need some help with the running back market. Maybe this is a reflection on how they feel about this draft running back class. But Pete, this one's a head scratcher, and I know we've gotten to this before talking about Jordan Howard. How is Jordan Howard the issue in Chicago? And the other thing is, now you're not getting a running back. I believe the Bears don't have a pick till I think it's well into the late 70s or 80s. I'm not understanding the play here on the Bears.
Yeah, this is something that you and I didn't understand last year when he was on the team and not getting the ball. I don't know why he fell out of favor, but for whatever reason, they made the determination they were just going to move on from Jordan Howard, who's been, you know, a productive back for a few years in Philadelphia or in Chicago, and it's, you know, especially in his rookie year, it really seemed like he was going to be a really, really nice player
when they were dog crap.
Yeah, and you know, this is who the Eagles have become. Is, you know, they have a problem, and Howie Roseman and company find a solution, and it's usually something where they end up looking really smart. You know, this is the team that managed to trade for Michael, you know, for Bennett when they needed an extra pass rusher. They managed to trade him off this year, and then got, you know, a couple pass rushers in for him. They got Vinnie Curry back. They got Brandon Graham back. They needed a receiver, so they traded for Golden Tate. Golden Tate and DeSean Jackson for, you know, whatever. And now they're getting a guy. They needed a running back, so now they got a running back. And even if you don't think Jordan Howard is enough, it certainly makes them get to play from the position of, they don't have to go get a running back, and they certainly don't have to go get a running back in the first round, for example, like some people were projecting that they were a potential landing spot for underwhelming Bama back, Josh Jacobs. So,
who doesn't have nearly the production that Jordan Howard even has within – he doesn't even mention the numbers Jordan Howard within 3 years in Chicago, for God's sakes.
For a fifth-round pick, or for at most a fifth-round pick in 2020, I mean, it feels like – I mean, it's certainly the difference, you know, if this is the difference between cutting him and getting something, yeah, I mean, I get it. But at the same time, it does really feel like it's a no-lose situation for the Eagles.
This guy has averaged, in 3 years in Chicago, over 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. There's got to be something more to this. It just seems like there should be something more to this. Like, there's a suspension coming, or he's just really, and we should know this if he really is a big jerk-off. We should know this by now. But you just gave away a running back, and he's not making a dime of money, Pete.
No, he's on his rookie deal. He's 24 and a half years old. He was a great athlete coming out of Indiana, too. I mean,
because he was part of UAB when the UAB program died.
Yeah.
And then he ended up in Indiana. I mean, he's a great story. There's no doubt about it.
But he was like, you know, for some people, you know, he was the sleeper back because he had all this production and he had all this athleticism, and it was, you know, his tape was okay. It wasn't great. And you were sort of like, you know, you get him and you'll figure it out. And then what I'm seeing immediately right now is that, like, the talk is the Bears are going to turn around and get a running back. And I know this comes down to ultimately fit and what you want for your offense, and I get it on some level, but it doesn't make it look any less like the Eagles are getting a very capable player.
But what are you getting now? If you're right. The Bears, what are you getting now? Are you going to shop at the second tier or third tier of free agent running backs? And you don't have a draft pick until in the 70s or the 80s.
Yeah, it's confusing. And
the other thing is Tariq Cohen is now RB1.
They've got him and the other dude. There's Cohen and there's one other guy that's there that's not bad. But yeah, that's, you know, and a lot of, what does this do? It ramps up pressure on Mitchell Trubisky, who has not fared well in that spot. So I will give Nagy a lot of credit. That offense has put up some weird numbers with, you know, and done some things that are very impressive considering what they have and don't have. But it just seems like you're really cutting off your nose to spite your face with this move. But we shall see how it plays out. My immediate reaction is the Eagles are a really smart organization who gets a lot better right now, opens up their options, and puts them, again, in a position of strength in a division where they don't appear to have much competition. This should at least give Carson Wentz some help in taking pressure off him and hopefully protect him a little bit in terms of being able to run the ball and not putting so much in terms of obvious passing situation. We shall see where this goes, but you know, and this is like, you know, the Robert Quinn deal earlier. In both cases, I get it from the standpoint – the Dolphins, it's selling off anything that's not nailed down.
But I
do love the move for the Dallas Cowboys. I think it's a great, great move. I don't know if he will pay off quite as much as they need him to, but certainly that was a guy – obviously, I had talked about on here as a guy that would look great as a fourth edge rusher. I mean, for Dallas right now, he's got to start. But it's – teams are taking advantage of that where they're giving these late-round picks, and in this case, late-round picks from the next year for players that can play and help them right now. Even they don't have to be great. They just have to be capable, and both those guys certainly qualify as capable.
I don't understand this from the – I mean, if you're the Bears, I don't know. 1,000 – he's, what'd you say, 3,300 yards over his first 3 years in the league, 24 touchdowns. Unless he's just a really, really bad guy, which after 3 years in the league, we should know this. It would be out there. That's great. Well, you know,
his first 2 years he had 1,313 yards at 5.2 a carry. In his second year, he had 1,122 yards at 4.1 a carry. This last year, 3.7 with 935 yards. I get it from the standpoint of if he's not what you want. For you, what you want to do on offense, I get it. But if the Philadelphia Eagles are getting a guy that they do cater to his strengths,
he can play the LeGarrette Blount role. He can play the Ajayi role. They have plenty of other backs who fit into that system. But the Eagles do like a traditional running back to do traditional running things.
Yeah. So if they're going to play more of a gap scheme as opposed to a zone scheme, then he may suddenly bounce back and be a terrific runner, and then, you know, down the stretch, you're talking about this as a huge swing point because this is a potential first-round matchup in the playoffs. You can easily see a situation where
It was last year.
I mean, you could absolutely see this be a rematch where now Jordan Howard is facing his old team and we get all those storylines, and he really does make him pay for it. I get it, but I feel like the Eagles are much better off.
Yeah, I mean, look, if that's the compensation, and this is the thing we've talked about with Duke and Emmanuel Agba, if you're going to give me a fifth or a sixth round pick, no, then screw it. That's not good enough.
If you're going to use this as like saying this is the barometer for what you're going to get for Duke Johnson, like who are we kidding? Why is anybody more interested in taking a 2020 fifth or sixth round pick for a guy that can help you right now?
It's madness. And look, I mean, it's weird because the Bears now, everything, the ship is righted, and you pretty much have everything you're looking for. But I don't know how you're going to – I mean, you got to have it back. You just do. And the other thing is this NFC North. You're gonna run into crappy weather situations. You just – I don't know. I don't understand the move because you gave them away for pretty much nothing.
Yeah. So, but your soft dome teams, other than when they have to go to Green Bay.
Well, usually, yeah, but, you know, I mean, I guess there's that. But some of these games could be in Chicago later in the year, though, too, Pete. So.
No question.
So, I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's. I mean, I agree with you. That's cutting your nose off to spite your face. I don't know how it – the Eagles, it's a win all day long, and that's all they seem to do with everything they touch right now. The Bears, that's just – I don't know. You created a hole when you didn't need to, in my opinion. Himalaya, obviously, you know, is a new podcast app. Make sure you're checking it out here. Remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Browns on the new Himalaya podcast app. In a very expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store for free and make sure you are following and subscribing to Locked On Browns. Now, Pete, we're going to get to this, and look, obviously 17 is gone. Ed Oliver's not going to happen anymore. But even if they still possessed 17, Pete, it's over. It is absolutely over. And let's just rewrite this ship for anybody who hasn't done it. Ed Oliver is a top 10 player at worst in this NFL draft class.
He's the second best player in the class behind Quinnen Williams. The problem is we don't know where either one of them is going to go, because if Arizona's going to take Kyler Murray, nobody seems to know.
Arizona's going to take Kyler Murray. That's just going to happen.
Right. But I mean, so where does Quinnen Williams go at that point? Like, is San Francisco, I would take them if I were them, but they seem to be at least allegedly totally in on Nick Bosa.
But they also think Garoppolo will come back. And we're a wild card team. I don't know. I mean, believe it, but they do.
But, I mean, if they take Nick Bosa, suddenly we're with the Jets. Are the Jets going to trade that pick, or are they going to take Quinnen Williams, or are they going to take somebody else?
If you were the Jets, you absolutely trade that pick. Because now Quinnen Williams is on the board. Ed Oliver's on the board. Josh Allen's still on the board. And I'll tell you right now, even if you drop down to 8, is the drop-off that big if you just take Brian Burns at 8? If you're the Jets, you get the hell out of 3 like it's nobody's business.
But the question is, if somebody's trading up to that, are they trading up for Quinnen Williams, or are the teams in that market basically, you know, are they sitting there going, well, both these guys are in here. We're happy with either one.
Or somebody say, I want to get the 3 to get to Dwayne Haskins.
Right. That would be the more logical scenario, or the Denver Broncos are trading up because they really, really want to be shitty fast and get Drew Lock.
We're worried Drew Lock may go here. So as opposed to trading down to 20 where he should go drafted, we're going to trade up to the top 5.
So, like, in a sane world, Quinnen Williams goes 1 or 2. But, like, we're already able to talk our way down where now he's at the Raiders. Are the Raiders going to take him, or are they going to take one of the ends because they sort of have some defensive tackles? I would hope to hell they take him. But, you know, if he goes at 4, then, you know, where does Ed Oliver go? And you've still got all these whispers that, you know, people still are down on him because of his weight and all this other crap. And
Even though he jumped his face off in Indianapolis at almost 290 pounds, but whatever.
Well, you know, the Aaron Donald comparison is whether you want to say he's as good or as polished or whatever.
I think part of it is people are just afraid to compare somebody to who's, and I get it because I hate to do it too. You're afraid to compare somebody who's had the success that Aaron Donald has.
Well, but, I mean, even if you don't want to say he's Aaron Donald, you're just saying from a physical standpoint, this is what Aaron Donald had.
If you really, really like Aaron Donald, draft Ed Oliver.
Right. That's the thing is, like, I don't understand the thought process that he could get out of the top 10, and yet there's a thought process that he could get out of the top 10. Now, again, to me, he's the second best player in the class. It's those are the two guys. So you know, the dare to dream there. At this point, again, I'm just hoping to hell that the Browns don't have to see Geno Atkins and Ed Oliver twice a year in Cincinnati. Like, that's a nightmare situation. So, yeah, I mean, look, he's always been this dude. I can't emphasize this enough. I don't know how anybody watched this tape and didn't go, oh, my God, he's a freak, in addition to being really good and all this other stuff. Like, he chases down running plays like a linebacker. He can chase down the quarterback from across the field. He was a nightmare to Baker Mayfield in his first game ever as a collegiate. He did not redshirt. He was there as basically an 18-year-old kid and giving Baker Mayfield all he could handle. Like,
beating up a 21-year-old and 22-year-old offensive lineman.
He ruined Lamar Jackson for a game. Those are the two. Like, theoretically, if he goes to the Bengals, he's seeing two guys who have already been like, I don't need to see this guy twice per season. Like,
ankle hurts him out this week.
So, yeah, I mean, it's – he's just phenomenal. At this point, it's just like morbid curiosity to see how willing to be stupid NFL teams are by passing on either one of these two dudes and seeing where they ultimately fall. Because, look, I hope Kyler Murray's great. It'd be great for the NFL. It'd be great for the Cardinals if this guy's awesome and you've got this guy flying around and doing all these other things, running and passing and all these other things. But if you're telling me in 5 years that, you know, that Quinn Williams and Ed Oliver are way better than Kyler Murray, Nick Bosa, and a bunch of these other guys who could potentially go ahead of them, I don't think anybody will be surprised. And yet we're still here talking about it. So, but I mean, we did this dance with Baker Mayfield. So maybe sanity will, you know, ultimately reclaim the throne here. And, you know, Quinn Williams ultimately goes two, Ed Oliver goes top five or whatever. But the other part of this that makes it interesting is the Gerald McCoy thing has not gone away.
Nope.
And, you know, it's not.
And now we're either one of those guys could be available at five. Yes.
Right. Well, and to be clear, the Browns are no longer in that business. They cannot afford to take on $13 million of Gerald McCoy. Yep. They'd have to A, give up salary, or B, convince him to restructure to a point where he's basically making nothing. But nevertheless, there are teams out there that could trade for Gerald McCoy. They could immediately take Ed Oliver, plug him in, get better financially. And if they're really ready to move on from Ed Oliver, who Bruce Arians basically said isn't as good as he used to be, like either yesterday or the day before.
But he's still good enough. I mean, don't say it like that.
you've insulted him. You've basically said his trade. You're basically killing his trade, or
yep,
at least damaging his trade value if you are moving him. It's one of those things I don't understand with the thought process here. It's like, you know, like vintage Hugh Jackson.
The correct response there is, and this is the one we always laugh about it because you always hear it every year when training camps open, Gerald McCoy's in the best shape of his life. That's the correct answer to that.
Right. He's here. We expect him to be here. We expect him to be great because he's always great. Move on. But yeah, so that was obviously a big deal. You know, the freakish athleticism, which should be a surprise to no one with Ed Oliver. He's freaking great.
And, you know, and look, good for the kid, because I don't know how this got off the broken road. And I will give credit to Pete Smith. I will give credit to our good buddy Connor Rogers. Nothing's changed here for these two. And nothing, I mean, Ed Oliver, here's the scouting report. He's a tad bit undersized and maybe not what you prefer as a defensive tackle. But he's damn effing good. That's it. That's the scouting report. And now he's benched, what, 32 times? His jumps were off the wall. He ran in the low 4.7s, and most people there said he probably didn't go 110%, because the last thing Ed Oliver would need is to have to say at the end of the workout is, my hammy kind of tightened up, because all the naysayers would have jumped the hell back on. There's some nut job out there trying to say he's a fifth-round pick. Good luck with that, pal. I mean, if you're covering the draft and you're saying Ed Oliver's a fifth-round pick, give it up.
Or a linebacker. That's the other stuff that I don't get.
I understand the stupid fascination of the athleticism. I do. I get that. But don't say he's a fifth-round pick. that is hot taking your way to try some credibility. Bro, find something else to do with yourself, man. Maybe this ain't for you. If you're calling Ed Oliver a fifth-round pick, you are the problem, not Ed Oliver. And get out of that freaky-ass basement that you keep yourself in. Pete, our boys today, Virginia. Juan Thornhill, you're going to say his name, the wide receiver. But my boy Tim Harris, and look, guys, you keep digging, and I appreciate some for giving me credit. But, you know, obviously, you know, doing some work, doing some research, you talk with agents. You know, they want to pimp their players, and you know, you get some workout videos, and look, this guy's going to show up. Tim Harris, cornerback from the University of Virginia, a little bit over 6'1", right around 200 pounds. He does have an injury history, none of which are from the hips down, which is, that's what you care about. Shoulders, arms, hands, fingers, whatever, that crap happens when you play football. But a phenomenal effort from that guy. But Virginia, we're still waiting to get official stuff. Juan, obviously we know most of what we're looking for is there. You know, the explosion, the speed. Harris, the same thing. Pete, your boy, and go ahead and say his name, because I until it becomes a Brown, I'm not going to sit down and say it 100 times till I get it right.
Alameda Zacchaeus, the blessed one. So
Philly real kid, quick, right? Philly kid, because I think he's going to work out with the Eagles.
Yes, that is his local thing. Real quick, Tim Harris, phenomenal athleticism. There's no doubt about it. The issue, you know, and certainly a team can take him as a late round flyer. He's got
lack of playing time.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's older. He's got lack of playing time, but he tested incredibly well, and he's a 6-foot-plus, 200-pound dude. Like, those tend to get drafted earlier than they should, just by virtue of the fact that they can do that.
Grown man body.
So if you're saying that he's sitting there on day three, and to me it's more in the fifth round on, and you're saying we're going to take a flyer on a guy and see if he can, you know, we catch lightning in a bottle. Because, you know, if you get one great season out of him at that point,
sure,
you're happy with it. But as far as the rest of it, Zacchaeus ran a 4.42 reportedly.
Call it a 4.5 because it's a pro day, which is still good enough.
Right. He at 188 pounds, which is important because it is, when you consider weight adjusted, he is a thick dude. I think he's only 5'7", so if he's 188 pounds, that is a really thick individual.
I think he's, like, I also think he's a little bit similar to Isabella in that. Like, you know, everybody wants
yes.
to, these guys are, they're put together. I mean, yeah, they're smaller, but they're put together.
Well, and Zacchaeus was actually a running back at Virginia before they, you know, basically the last 2 years, he was nominally a running back, but really doing everything else. I think his vertical was reported at like 35 or something, which is or something like that, which is more than five or something. He had something else that was more than fine, but those are the only ones we know.
Was 35, yeah.
And then Juan Thornhill, we know he did the testing for agility, but we just haven't seen the numbers for it. You know, for this, hopefully it's just the sake of showing off, and there's not a red flag, because to this point, obviously, you know, other than age, being he's 23, he, you know, compared to Eric Berry, he's basically right in line. But Eric Berry's 21,
which maybe hurts him as far as being a first round pick, because, you know, you are what you are at 23, which is 49.
Yeah, I mean,
that's fine enough.
Yeah, I mean, 23 is not a problem. I mean, but he's a freak. So if you're saying, you know, this is who he is, by all means. But to me, he's a first round player. I don't understand why some people have him in the third round, but
Virginia players, they never go as high as we think. And I remember there's the kid with the Saints now. He may have went seventh round or undrafted. And like the Virginia players, and you had the DN you were in love with last year. The Virginia players never get drafted as high as we think they should.
Right. Andrew Brown screwed the pooch in testing, but very productive. But no, Micah Kizer ultimately was a legit prospect, and I think he went in the fifth round or something like that. So, yeah, we shall see.
Eli Harold was another one. These guys, everything seems to check the boxes, but it never pans out as far as when they actually get their names called.
With the notable exception of obviously Chris Long, who went number one. But, yeah, in general, the Virginia guys don't tend to go super high. So, to me, he's a first-round prospect. If he goes closer to the third round where I've seen some people have him, and he goes to the Browns in that third round neighborhood, great, because I think he's you know, I think he's a plug and play strong safety that gives you basically a third corner on the field, which would be to me, ultimately Wilkes is going to, the question here is if you're saying you want to, you like Derek Kindred and you want to sort of pair him up and pair skill sets, you have Derek Kindred as sort of a rundown player or a run situation player, a bigger body linebacker, you know, a quasi linebacker. And then you get to passing situations or you have a lead, as hopefully the Browns will with this offense, that you have this guy come on the field and basically be a third corner in that cover three scheme. I think that becomes a really, really nice fit. So hopefully we will get official numbers on that, but at least so far so good on Zacchaeus. To me, I think he's a really, really nice player. But again, it becomes he's redundant in so much as you do have Andy Isabella, you do have guys like Penny Hart. There's a lot of short, and I think Zacchaeus is probably 5'7", thick players with a lot of speed who can do things in space, and it may almost be to a point where just having so many hurts them, where, you know, maybe if Isabella goes early, like let's say, you know, late two, early three or somewhere on that point, you know, you don't get Penny Hart and you come back in that late day three and you grab a guy like Zacchaeus as sort of just a weapon. It, not unlike what the Bears, you know, bringing up the Bears, not unlike what the Bears have been doing with Tariq Cohen, I think he can be a guy who gives you a couple plays per game that you can be excited about. And because he's so elusive and so low to the ground, you know, if you're playing against the defense and they're accounting for Odell Beckham and they're accounting for Antonio Callaway and they're accounting for David Njoku and they're accounting for Rashard Higgins and they're still dealing with Nick Chubb, and all of a sudden you have this guy like Zacchaeus coming as like a fourth, fifth option on a given play, who's left, and you create a touch for him and he just becomes a problem and potentially makes a big play. And that's where a guy like that can fit.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. Look, we all know, obviously, you know, Randall's looking for a contract extension. You probably got to assume that any talks changed once the safety market went where it is, and now it's, you know, off the chain. And look, you know, you can't blame Randall. Look, if this is what dudes are getting, this is what dudes are getting. And I forget who asked the question, but maybe this is where Thornhill would fit in here, because if you look at him and maybe he could project and he could be, you know, a zone corner, traditional free safety, you're going to get maybe a year under his belt. And look, we're going to get to this point, and Pete, we've talked about it, and guys, I don't know if you know, there's going to be people that are going to have to go. We've seen Zeitler go. You know, we've seen, you know, it's going to happen. So, you know, Randall, if it's not going to be a team-friendly number, he could end up on the wrong side of this, and then maybe you have a guy who's got a year under his belt becomes your free safety in Juan Thornhill.
That's certainly an option. I think part of this ultimately ends, and perhaps part of the calculus with Peppers is ultimately, let's say the Browns love Demaryius Randall and they want to get this worked out one way or the other. Maybe they're waiting for, you know, maybe they've got numbers in mind. Maybe they want to see, you know, how things start to go this season. But if you're going to pay Randall, you know, I don't think he's worth $10 million a year, but let's throw out a number and say $8 to $10 million per year.
Well, that's probably where it started, was $8. Now he's right. Probably talking $10.
But if you're paying him that, then you're going to need the guy next to him to make, you know, a rookie deal. And if it's, you know, Derek Kindred for now, obviously when he comes up, they'll probably move on. But if it's a Juan Thornhill or if it's a Chauncey Gardner-Johnson next to him that's on that rookie deal, it helps balance out the cost. Because at some positions, and linebackers another one where this is going to happen, other than the Joe Schobert, I'm assuming, they're going to basically have to roll guys in there. And maybe they get a free agent for a couple years with a low number. You know, like today, Brandon Marshall signed for $4.1 million. I thought that was really reasonable. The fact – I don't know if the Browns even looked at him, but the fact that, you know, he ultimately went to Oakland would suggest to me that the Browns are very much ready for a year of Chris Kirksey, his last at will. But that's ultimately what's got to happen. Where do you put your money on defense? Defensive linemen, corners, you can say one safety and one linebacker – but the rest of those guys are going to have to be sort of rotated in. You're going to have to be able to find ways to be creative with your money. It's the same way on offense. You know, you've got two offensive linemen you know, ideally two, maybe three that are making premium money. The Browns have four right now, which is part of the reason Zeitler got moved. He was the fifth. Quarterback is obviously ultimately going to make a ton of money. You're going to cheap out on running back. You're going to pay probably one tight end, assuming, you know, we're ultimately going to keep Njoku for a while. And then you can afford ultimately long-term to pay one really, really, really good receiver, in this case, Odell Beckham, who's worth, you know, what he's being paid. And then whether it's next year or the year after, you're going to ultimately have to find ways to cut costs at receiver. And that's just sort of the way this is happening. And part of the calculus, whether it's Dorsey doing this or hopefully it's John D. Podesta and, you know, the fishy cap number and the rollover
the nerds,
is basically being able to plan out their cap for the next couple years. They clearly have a plan for next year. And then, you know, with the work stoppage and all that, it may get a bit murky, but they do have a way to keep this thing going ultimately throughout that 4-year window, which I assume has to be what this whole thought process has to be. You've got Baker Mayfield for that window. You're going to do everything you can to maximize it, so plan ahead.
Well, it's, you know, and to like push together two phrases, it's cutting Peter to pay Paul. Christian Kirksey makes all the money. Joe Schobert does all the work. So you're going to end up moving on from Christian Kirksey because Joe Schobert needs the money. Demarius Randall is going to eventually get moved on for it because Denzel Ward, money is always going, his salary is only going to go to grow more. But, you know, come next offseason, you know, if you didn't address it this year, you're going to need a true running mate. And this is all how it works out. And, you know, I hate to say it, you're going to move on from Jarvis Landry because you have two to three guys that you can pay less money to maybe do the same legwork. And I know some are poo-pooing the cap and want to be down on it. And our buddy Jack Duffin over there in England, he's getting a little bit of a hard time. That's the thing. You want sustainability. And he's not everybody, like, we're all enjoying it, but you got to understand the money. And Pete, we've been on this, it's got to be almost 8-9 months now. The money's going to dry up, and it's going to dry up really, really fast. So you got to find, you know, and that's the thing. And you move on from Zeitler because there's a guard who makes $12 million. You have a guy who drafted at 33 who makes peanuts, and it's just the way all that works. This one here is on Rashard Higgins. This is actually a pretty good question. It's a good question to ask. If no one offers Higgins a contract on his tender, do we get him back at a certain price automatically, or do we have to negotiate a deal with him as well? And the thanks is always appreciated. So somebody appreciates the work. Go ahead, Pete.
The answer is it would be automatic. The tender offer would be automatic. He'd get a one-year deal for a set amount of money. However, obviously his agents at that point are going to be like, yeah, we could do this, but, you know, we'd like to get a better deal. Or they may be excited to jump on the tender, even if it's not ideally what they want to make this year, because they think he's going to have a nice year and they want him to get an unrestricted situation at that point. So I think the Browns are certainly hoping that a team is going to negotiate this contract for them. That's certainly why nothing has happened yet. But I also think that's part of the reason nobody's doing it, is because they know the Browns are ultimately going to match it and they've wasted their time on it. But yeah, it would be a set number, 1-year deal. If he signs it, they could, you know, there's a lot of options with that, but the answer is yes.
And look, and the Browns may just say, look, we're going to play this year out the way it is. Here's your money. And if you look, I mean, and guys, look, Rashard Higgins is very vocal on Twitter. There's nothing. I mean, like Randall, you see some cryptic tweets. You're not sure how you take those. It's not the same way with Rashard Higgins. Rashard Higgins, and Pete, we've talked about this. And I think even if you're Higgins, maybe the goal here is, let's play one more year with Baker. And the phrase, obviously, that Pete put is, why leave the golden goose? Rashard Higgins, guys, there was nothing to him. And now all of a sudden, and then he went down in Baltimore on his birthday. Not in Baltimore, but versus Baltimore on his birthday. Wow, this is going to be a tough loss here because him and Baker got a really, really good rapport. And even with Odell Beckham being here now, it's not going to change. I mean, some guys just, you know, the chemistry is there. Rashard Higgins, so I play this year in, what you say, if he plays 16 games, 50 receptions, 700 yards, 5 touchdowns. That puts him in line to get where whoever is going to offer it, $4 or $5 million a year next year. You know, talking what, maybe three?
More than that. I mean,
Jameson Crowder type money.
Well, yeah, I mean, he made a lot of money. The guy I was going to mention, if he has that kind of year, is a guy like Adam Humphries. Adam Humphries had 76 catches for 816 yards. That was his year.
I just don't know if Higgins is going to get that with the amount of ammunition that's around here.
Well, I mean, no, I don't think it's quite that high. But even his year before that was 61 for 631 and one touchdown. Like, the problem, you know, it's just how the market tends to work when you get out. Like, there's just stupid amounts of money being paid to these guys that, you know, if he gets out there, he'll make money. But if you are a wide receiver and you are like Hollywood Higgins, you are sitting there. If I play with Baker, he's going to, you know, it's basically Baker the moneymaker for you. That's, yep. I mean, this becomes a situation where, let's say, you know, Higgins has a nice year. They sign the tender and he moves on. There are going to be other receivers, and this is why I thought Breshad Perriman was going to be smarter than evidently he was, and basically have the same thought: is I got this even the 1 year $4 million contract because I was
18 receptions.
Right. So if I stuck around for another year, Baker the moneymaker, and just keep doing that, and there are going to be other opportunities with other guys who are going to be finding 1 year deals. Or really short-term deals where they can basically get to a guy like Baker Mayfield because that's who he's going to be, recoup your value, get yourself a nice contract the following year, and it works out great for the Browns. They get cheap receivers that can be pretty good, and the receivers work out great because they get what they want, which is ultimately a bigger contract from someone else.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't see, and obviously there's been no hint of this, so I have no reason to believe that, you know, Higgins isn't going to be here, and everything you see from him is, you know, he's all in, and obviously he wants to be here. It's just, you know, if somebody's going to, and you got to think, if somebody was going to offer, they would have done it by now. I mean, there's not much left on the wide receiver market, so that it's, you know, look, it's the game, it's the dance of the business of the NFL. Going through a couple more of these.
Hey, man, and like, there's still got, I mean, like I said, Brandon Marshall just got signed today. Isaiah Crowell just got signed today. And Dominican Sue obviously still sitting out there. That one could, you know, I still think that one could be there into the summer where that guy basically waits till camp's over and goes, hey, I'm ready. But, you know, there's time. But obviously, you know, deadlines make deals. So at some point, you know, we get to the point where the tender deadline comes down and stuff starts moving. But hey, freeze over. It is winding down, but you know, because there are still things happening and no moves being made, and teams are getting better. That somebody may come in late and try to grab him. I mean, if you're the Ravens, you might have to take a shot just to hope because you're looking at nothing else.
And it is, but you want to know what though? But the problem with the Ravens and Rashard Higgins is where's the match? Because you got four tight ends. You know, that's, you know, like what they do is not where Higgins fits. I don't know. The Ravens. I'd love to know what the plan is in there in that building. All right. We got a couple more here. Let's see here.
Seahawks could make sense.
Oh, sure. They could. Corey Cleveland. I think it's 625. Morgan Burnett. Look, he's going to get released from Pittsburgh. You don't say, we'll take a 6-7 round pick, and then, oh, maybe we'll release him. Once you say 6-7 round pick, and it's Morgan Burnett, a name of that caliber, you're going to release him. It's a no for me, Pete. It's a no.
The answer, you know, for me would be no, unless he's basically willing to play for the league minimum. I mean, it's got to be that or damn close to it with maybe an incentive-heavy contract. He's okay, I think there are better options out there right now.
Well, the thing, though, is even if you put pen to paper with him, there's no guarantee he's here for game one.
Right. No, all it would do is basically try to send the message that you don't have to rush taking a safety at 49. I still think that's the best play. But, you know, if you don't value strong safety in the scheme, if you're saying we can get a box safety, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth round or whatever – then you want to sign him and be like, yeah, we'll take a shot and maybe he gives us something. Sure, it becomes a situation like had they signed Kevin Johnson at that point. But realistically, no, because I don't expect him ever to contribute.
If it's Morgan Burnett versus Derek Kindred, I'll take Derek Kindred. That's the way I'm going to roll in whatever you can get at 49 or 80. I'd rather go that route. From Kevin Heathers, is Scott McLuhan around this year? And any buzz if he was valuable last year? I'm assuming we would know if he was around this year.
As far as I know, he's not connected because I believe he's tweeted out some things this year again. You know, last year he was as a basically an independent contractor type short term, you know,
info consultant, for hire.
consultant type deal. And, you know, I don't know how helpful he was, but he was another in the many people who love Baker Mayfield. And he tweeted that out before he was hired. And at least when he came out right after the draft, when I assume his employment basically ended, he was talking about how much he loved Jannard Avery and thought he was going to be great. You know, how helpful was he? I don't know. I will say that Scott McLuhan is a really good evaluator in general. He, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to get another shot as like the main dude, but he did a great job for Washington and got in a situation with some ugly, ugly, you know, office politics with the people in there and Bruce Allen and basically, you know, trashing him to ownership with his.
And be honest, though, I don't know if that's so much him, though, as the Redskins organization.
No, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't him. It was Bruce. But Bruce Allen was basically going to ownership because Scott McLuhan had issues with alcohol. Like he has been dealing with it, but and I think he's got a couple Deweys to his credit. But my understanding is Bruce Allen was basically telling Daniel Snyder that he was drinking and doing this, that, and the other, and ultimately was successful at being able to push him out,
railroad him out.
And that's where he sort of ended up in this situation. So I don't know. And the other part is I don't know what he wants to do. Maybe he likes being sort of this hired gun evaluator type thing. But yeah, it will be interesting to follow him. I thought, and maybe this will still happen, that when Sashi moved on, that maybe Scott McLuhan would come in and take that job. Andrew Berry moved on, that maybe Scott McLuhan may take that role, and maybe that might happen in like May after the draft is over and they're, you know, basically moving on from whoever they're moving on at that point. But yeah, you know, he was helpful in the fact that he was another one that loved Baker Mayfield and apparently loved Jannard Avery. Good evaluator. You know, I hope for the best for him because he's obviously done well for the Browns.
Yeah. And look, I mean, it worked out and I don't know. I mean, maybe if NFL Network wants to pair somebody with Daniel Jeremiah, that may be a better thing for Scott, where it's just giving information and you get, you know, you get paid pretty well that way. He kind of got black flagged, you know, black ball, black flag, whatever. I think that's kind of what's happened to him, but it's not going to change the fact that the guy knows how to evaluate talent and he's really damn good at it. And oh crap, Pete. Besides you and McLuhan, I don't know if anybody had Jannard Avery as a top 50 player.
Well,
go ahead, do your Simpsons gif. Go ahead, put the arm up.
It's lonely at the mountaintop, but you know,
we take our small W's when we get them. We take when we get them.
So yeah, I mean, it's that's the stuff where you just don't know. Really what's going on in the same respect that there, you know, the conversation of, well, why doesn't Sashi have another job type deal? For one, I don't know if he's ever expressed interest in having another job. And it's been weird how he's been so private to the extent where he was like scheduled to speak at the Sloan Analytics Conference and ultimately pulled out.
Is he still under Brown's
contract? I don't know the answer to that either.
I believe he is. I think he is. And that's probably what it would. No, you're not going to go speak because we're afraid what you might say. Eventually, that contract's going to run out, and
I want the book. That's all I want from Sashi is the book. But
you know what?
Yeah,
Sashi Brown, come do a podcast. Locked On Browns, come do 30 minutes once it's all swept under the rug. First things first, accept what you did here because you did a really fantastic job. And we'll have some fun. I mean, but, you know, I don't know. And I love, and this is where, because this is the best part, because for me and Pete, we accept the analytic approach. We accept the football tape approach. Like, we like every aspect. I mean, like, everybody who gets so upset, all the, every drop of info is good. Use every stinking cent of it. And how many times, like, how did we go through this linebacker class? There were guys we loved, and what did we tell you? Gone. Got Hodge, gone. Coney, gone. I mean, it's a mix of everything, Pete.
Right. So, long story short on that is the world of front office and scouting and all that is a very murky business, and there's just so much involved between contracts and relationships and stuff. So, yeah, Scott McLuhan, I would love to see him added to the Browns. That, you know, that was something that was really popular at one point anyway. That if he wants to do that full time, that'd be great. But ultimately, he's got to do what's best for him and what's best for his health. And I don't know where he's at on either of those things. But yeah, he keeps crushing it.
And I will tell you guys, because a bunch of people asked, and apparently to get to Scott McLuhan, you contact his wife. I did send an email. I was said no. He's not looking to do anything podcast wise, whatever. He'll probably do some radio appearances. Who knows? But look, I mean, being in the front office is a stressful job. So, I mean, with Scott, look, evaluate talent. Maybe go work, you know, NFL Network, something where, if that's something he wants to do. Guy knows what he's doing, though. Does a damn good job with it. Pete, we're getting closer and closer here. Here's one more that we do have, though, that somebody asked. Jalen Hurd. Interesting. We're going to find out a little bit more. I believe it's April 2nd. Hopefully the knee's right. We can see some more. He's got to be, what, 23 now? He's definitely older, so you can't... You're not going second round. You're not going third round. If you want to gamble day three. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, there's ways he could fit, Pete. And... I mean, he's athletic. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think he's a day three pick. And, you know, I think he's a really intriguing guy. Testing will be very important for him. His production is fine. It's not great. But the thing that stands out with him is he is unbelievably dense in terms of how he's built. The idea that he went from being a 240-pound back who looked enormous, and he's certainly very tall, to he's 224 pounds, and he looks like...
Yep.
Which suggests he's really, really strong. Turns you get into all that stuff of muscle density and all that. But yeah, and I think he's an interesting player. I know Stephen Thomas is trying to take a lot of credit, even though nothing has actually happened yet.
But which is weird. I mean, he's planted his flag there, and like he's almost at the point now where he's like, "Well, can you just do something eventually?"
Right, so he just turned 23 in January, so he's fine. But, yeah, I mean, he's 6'4", three quarters, 226. That's a really big guy. But if he tests reasonably well and you draft him to be that power slot and he catches on, then, you know, he becomes a potential – first, if he doesn't work out, you know, it's not the end of the world probably where you take him. You know, it's theoretical that if you get him, like, let's say the fifth or sixth round, he doesn't even make the team if he doesn't perform well. But if he does surprise you and he does show you enough that he's a player worth keeping, or maybe even, you know, he could be a year on the practice squad and then it works out. I mean, obviously that Rashard Higgins spent a little time in that scenario, that he could represent life after Jarvis Landry if you like that style, because he's big, he takes up space, and you know, he's still learning the position, so you'd like to think there's upside there in terms of how good he can be. But, yeah, there's a lot to like with guys like him or that power slot position in general, whether you want to use a receiver like Jalen Hurd, you want to use a smaller tight end, or, you know, you like to go the other way and you want to go, you know, really small, quick guy, like a guy like, you know, obviously this would be the super extreme, but Greg Dortch, you know, 5'7" and change and 173 pounds. I mean, it's a
barely
53 pound difference. But yeah, it basically becomes a style thing. And all, you know, ultimately the real question is, can a guy like Jalen Hurd or Dortch, we certainly believe can, how do they do it as a guy you can catch and then run after the catch, after catching a pass from Baker Mayfield? Because, you know, if you want to make the team, that's where this ultimately has to go.
Well, and look, I mean, if you're going day three, just most likely maybe take the younger guys. Hope there'll be more to them. You know, Hurd could be interesting in the fact that he can do several things. At his size, you could almost, you know, you could sign him up. I mean, you could put him in as, you know, H-back tight end and some looks. He can carry the ball, God forbid, if you wanted to or needed him to. There's several avenues you could go with him. He's interesting. Let's make sure these numbers match up. And if, I believe he's as athletic as advertised. I'm not doubting that part, but you still want to see some concrete evidence.
But sure, I mean, what was he? I'm assuming he was probably like a, you know, some massive star recruit when he came out. So, you know,
kept guys like Alvin Kamara and John Kelly off the field.
Yeah, if he was like a big time, you know, five star athlete who's been working, allegedly a five star running back. You know, you'd like to think that that was based on some real tangible numbers that he's ultimately going to be able to recreate at Pro Day. So. Yeah, it's all there for him. I think he can be if he tests well, and you know, Stephen Thomas can have his little fist pump, deservedly so. Then he does become a real nice wild card in this draft as to who takes him and what do they want to do with him.
Talented. There's talent there, and even still, you got to give the credit for going away from Tennessee, creating a new route. I mean,
that's a fascinating path. Go from the dude at running back to change your body and then be a receiver.
At Baylor. And he went to Baylor at, like, the worst time where, like, the program is just, like, I mean, there was, like, a million people. Just disband it, blow it up, go SMU style, take it down to the core and burn every drop of it. But, you know, interesting name as we go through this. Guys, you know, look, iTunes rating reviews, those always help. Make sure you get on those. Pete, anything else as we close this one out? I mean, you know, we're getting closer and closer here. It's like I'm starting to like feel it. Like it's coming, and that Thursday night's going to be weird because most likely the Browns ain't going to have no action in it. But by all means, draft all these quarterbacks. Draft every single one of them. And we see some mock drafts, and it was, Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football. That's a fantastic first round mock draft. Put all those guys in that mock draft. That only makes things better, Brown Eyes.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that's worth pointing out is just that as athletic data is creeping out, we're getting some of these small school guys that are looking pretty promising. And there's a couple offensive linemen that are falling into that boat. Like Gil Brandt.
Are you about to fall in love with a couple obscure offensive linemen like you do every year?
I'm not falling in love because I haven't actually watched him play, but like Drew Forbes from Southeast Missouri State is a nice guard prospect, played tackle there. But, you know, Gil Brandt pointing these guys out. I Asua Opeda from Weber State. Like these are guys, it may or may not get drafted ultimately. Gil Brandt was saying potentially fourth round for Drew Forbes. But they could – Jimmy Moreland from James Madison's another one who had a good pro day. These small school guys that can really – you know, bolster the board, maybe a surprise or two, you know, late in the draft from a team like the Browns. And they may not work out, they may not be anything, but they could be guys that come in as undrafted free agents or whatever. And especially the small school linemen, those are the guys I keep an eye on just from the standpoint of James Campen. That is a thing that has been done quite a bit in his time. So if you give him athletic bodies, he tends to, you know, have pretty good results. So, yeah, there are guys who are coming out that look pretty good that may not be getting quite a bit of buzz in terms of who we're actually talking about, but they will come up as we go through this, and they are making this draft class, which, you know, I think is good in spots, but overall not as great as you'd like it to be. is getting a little bit healthier. Linebackers are the big one that's benefiting from this one. The as much as we've seen some of these guys just fall completely apart, we are seeing some guys come out from that, and not necessarily super small schools, although EJ Speed from Tarleton State is a small school guy, but there's a lot of D1 guys that just haven't been picked up on a ton. Obviously, we talked about Cole Holcomb earlier this week.
Yep.
That could help teams and be good. Those Big Ten ACC Pro Days that haven't gotten a lot of talk in terms of like big name prospects because these guys weren't at the combine are really, really helping out quite a bit.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's nice to see a draft class that's going to have depth at positions of need, and especially linebacker. Look, unless something happens. Right now, it's Joe and it's Christian Kirksey, and you're not really sure about it, but the rest of it. You know, Ray Armstrong doesn't really tickle the fancy so much, but yeah, that's a position there. And you know, the safety class is obviously one that showed some pretty good depth to it. And quarterback, you can find some guys there. You can find some guys to fill out the rotation. And the thing is, but with most of it is these guys are going to have to come in, and you're looking for the guys with the athletic profile. Because where you're going to earn your money and, you know, show your worth is probably going to be special teams now with the Browns. It seems weird because we talked about this in August and you weren't concerned about then. You were concerned about filling out the roster and getting, you know, the best talent you could for guys who were actually going to play the first, second, and third downs. But now you're looking for some box checkers, you know, some guys who are going to play on, you know, punt team, kickoff, and all that stuff. You need those dudes. This has been your daily delivery of all things Dog Pound. Check out all of Pete's work over at NFL Spin Zone. Put out a great piece today on Sheldon Richardson. You don't want to use the term the straw that stirs the drink because that's Myles Garrett, but it just makes life easier, and you're getting closer and closer to that D-line rotation.
Oh, and he is just so much. Odell Beckham is the dude. I get it. Olivier
it's Vernon just so forgotten is a fantastic because player. Of Odell.
I wrote it, I will stand by it. To me, Sheldon Richardson will make as big of an impact on defense as Odell Beckham does on offense. That's how massive he is. And a large part of that is obviously going from Trevon Coley to Sheldon Richardson. But I do think that's not understated. If you actually look at his career and how good he is and has been, he is just a wrecking beast out there who can just it gives them four guys on the line at any point that can make their own play he's 2-3 feet from the ball every play. You have to deal with him and Ogunjobi just makes life so much easier, as opposed to and God bless him, he tried. Trevon Coley is just it's a different world with Richardson in there, by the way, who's missed 7 games and 5 of them were suspension.
But the other thing with Sheldon Richardson, though, is it does give you some sort of fallback option if, God forbid, Miles has to miss a game or Vernon has to miss a game. If you draft 2 defensive tackles, which we think is going to happen because they really haven't brought any other bodies in there, throw one of the kids in there at defensive tackle. Sheldon Richardson can kick outside. The versatility of what you're trying to build here with this defensive line unit, it's what you're looking for. It's what all the good teams do. It's all the successful teams do. It's going to be fun here. Follow the show at Locked On Browns. Always keep it a follow back account. Best way for you guys to get in touch with me. A lot of people don't like Twitter, but they will. And I've had some people refer to it as the idiot box. They will send the DMs over there. I have no problem with that, guys. It's, you know, I enjoy returning the messages, and you know, sometimes we can go a little bit more in depth on why we feel a certain thing, you know, a certain way about a certain thing, or move, whatever, player, yada, 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 etc. Follow me personally, at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd. It's been a fun week here, guys, and we're going to enjoy this here for the next month, because for Pete and I, obviously, you know, doing this Browns-wise, but we truly enjoy the draft process, and we're about a month out now, a little bit less away. It's fun. And it's weird now because we're getting close now to where everything is done. You know, Pete's phrase, the hay is in the barn, but things are going to still pick up, and there's going to be bad information, leaked information, whatever, and it all becomes part of it. But the draft process is just, it's just fun. It's just damn fun. There's no way about it. LGB on the LOB until tomorrow. Let's go, Browns.